please welcome in our new sponsor, Fishing Clash. Download Fishing Clash for free right now on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of your Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose the gift code section, and input my special code Taskmaster to get an awesome reward for a total value of $20. Enjoy chilling atmosphere after a hard-working day. Get familiar with different types of fish species and their habits. You can choose one or two, or you know what you like the most. Explore amazing fishing spots worldwide from Florida to Kamchatka. Whether you prefer fly fishing, ice fishing, trolling, you'll admire the look of all the fishing spots available in this game. This game will help you remember how you went fishing with your dad when you were a kid. So download Fishing Clash today for free on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of the Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose gift code section, and input the special code Taskmaster to get a total value of $20. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fishing Clash, as it is a great casual time killer. Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I am your host, JP Ajahn-Paz. With me, of course, star of the show, former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the Games Master, Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
Very good, JP. How are you, my friend?
I am doing good. What's going on with the Tales from the Territory? I saw you popping up over there like crazy.
Yeah, I did two of them, and I'm going to do another one. I think it's November 8th. I did the Florida one, and I did the Hawaii one. Now I'm doing one on the Grams. So it should be very interesting, and it looks like they got a winner there, that's for sure. And I know I was surprised how much The Rock is pushing. It's his production company along with Vice.
Yeah, he was saying it was his love letter to professional wrestling, that he was really, really passionate about this project.
Yeah, I mean, he was in the throes of it. I mean, I thought about this. He probably, you know, was in Memphis. He was in Portland, probably. He was in Honolulu, probably San Francisco. Mid-Atlantic, WWE, maybe. So maybe Florida. He's been around a lot of places. So, I mean, he grew up with the territories, and he actually saw them end.
Yeah, very true. The thing that's interesting, too, is obviously it's on Vice, and the guys from Dark Side of the Ring are involved. Those guys had a bit of a problem, which is funny. They were almost too woke or whatever they were trying to do, and they got themselves in a bit of trouble with the Flair stuff. I mean, a lot of guys in the business didn't want to deal with them anymore. I mean, they fell into an area there where they got, you know, now they're out of it and stuff, but they got into a little bit of trouble. They even got into a little bit of trouble with you at one point, because they were giving out some false information about you on the show.
Right. And they also got into editing guys' answers, but I think they're out of that. I think maybe the guys that were doing it didn't have anything to do with it. It was somebody being an editor and wanting to get rise in the company, you know, because they're very nice guys. I've talked to them, very nice guys. And I'm glad, hey, everybody deserves a second chance. And if they didn't have, or if they had a little to do with it, it wasn't their fault. You know, it's how everything's edited, you know what I mean? You could say, you know, how is Ric Flair? You could say, oh, he's a wonderful guy. And then later on, something is said, and they put the edited version in, which doesn't say anything about him being a wonderful guy. And Rick paid the price for that. A lot of them did.
Tommy Dreamer, too.
Yeah.
And did they apologize to you? I mean, did they basically tell you, sorry for...
Yeah, they basically said, hey, a lot of stuff was... That's why I think it was maybe the end of this. They said a lot of stuff was taken out of context. So they were great.
I know Evan just a little bit, interviewed him a couple times. Really nice guy, Evan Husney from the show. Yeah. So maybe he was steering the wrong direction, but there were some parts where it seemed like personal attacks on some people rather than documentaries about guys.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, here's the thing. How long ago was that plane ride from hell? 25 years ago?
2020, I think. Yeah, 2002.
Are you going to remember what really happened on that plane? You'll remember some things, and it won't be 100% clear. But everything you're going to remember precisely. I just read a fascinating book, and that was about, it's a psychology book, that every time you remember a memory, you've changed that memory. Like, suppose you and I went out on a boat fishing, and we caught a bunch of fish. And in your memory, the boat is blue. In my memory, it's red. And the next time we think about it, maybe the color of the boat would change. Maybe the day would change. It's like, unless you go through all your memories like a book, your memories are going to change. It's pretty fascinating. And it's probably true, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, Andrew Anderson and I have been traveling the roads together a lot, and Andrew will say something to me, oh, you remember that? And I'll go, yeah, yeah, I do. And it will be half-ass right, you know what I mean? Because I don't know if I'm losing a little or you got so much shit filled in your head. If it isn't that important to you, you're not going to remember everything, but shit 20 years from ago, I don't think they remembered exactly right. Not saying shit didn't happen, but I don't think they remembered everything right.
So it's true, because a buddy of mine, we love AC/DC, the band, and when they came around years ago, we saw them like 5 or 6 times, and our memories, we were combining the shows. We're like, oh, remember when it was raining? We're like, wait, no, that was New Jersey. Like, but we also saw them in Philadelphia. It's funny, we were like meshing the memories together. So even, I mean, we're, you know, we're not that old. We haven't traveled as many roads as some guys, but it's just like that's so true, that who knows some of these memories, and is it true? Is it not true? Is it two memories in one? They're confusing the stories. Who knows?
Right. And I think we do that, too. When you start to hear a story, like back in the territory days, we'll say, you start to hear a story. Like I'll be talking to Luke Williams and say, remember that time we went to Miami? Well, I thought it was Fort Pierce. You know what I mean? And this guy was involved in the story. I don't remember him being involved in the story. I remember another story he was involved in. So I think you're right.
Also, with the plane ride from hell, I looked it up, and there's a certain person that was sued that was on the plane. They mention him briefly in the show, but it's funny. It's like his name wasn't Ric Flair, but Flair was like the villain that they tried to make in the episode. But this guy literally got sued and got in trouble, and like, they didn't focus on that. All you had to do was look that up. If you were researching that, I Googled it and looked it up, and I looked. I'm like, oh, shit. I was like, they barely mentioned that guy on that episode, or they made him look good, and they only mentioned him for like a few minutes, and they made Flair look like the villain when that guy was literally sued. I was like, wow, weird. So that's why I was kind of iffy on that episode for sure. I mean, that was a bad one.
Yeah, and not burying the girl that made the comment about Flair, but didn't she get arrested recently for grand theft?
Yeah, some sort of, yeah.
So, I mean, that doesn't
some
mean...
sort of felony, yeah.
That doesn't mean what she said is a lie, but it makes you question her character. Why did she come out later, 20 years later? She was looking for a payday.
Of course. Yep. Yeah. That's another thing, too. Sometimes you can't give credence to, not saying her in general, but some people you can't give more credence to than others. Like, why not? Like, Flair had no defense on the show, but yet she gets all this defense. Like, you got to play both sides. You got to make it even.
Okay. Concussion protocol in football, right?
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody sued the NFL for concussions?
Yeah, isn't there some billion-dollar lawsuit going on that they can't settle?
I'm not sure, but are you trying to tell me you're playing football and you don't know you can get concussed?
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, you should be aware of that, of course, yeah.
Well, what I'm saying is the difference is, like in MMA, right? Those guys are going to get concussed all the time, right?
Yep.
But they're not employees.
Yeah.
Right? They're independent contractors.
Yeah, technically.
And what I'm getting at is, are you trying to tell me you're an MMA fighter and you don't think you're going to get a concussion? You're going to be the greatest in the world then. So, I mean, everything can be slanted and disinformation, and we're at a real strange age in our life cycle. I mean, you can't believe anything you hear.
Sad but true. Isn't that crazy? You have to, like, triple check people nowadays.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, Tales of the Territory, I saw you were on Rock's Instagram page. They have a cool drawing of you. I mean, if they make a poster of that, I'll buy that. That poster is awesome. He's got Lawler on there, got you on there. Very, very cool.
Yeah, it was a very, very nice poster. I'm glad I was on it. It was very nice.
Were you surprised? Or did they tell you you're going to be on it?
No, I was very surprised. Somebody sent it to me. My daughter actually sent it to me.
Wow.
Yeah. And she never sends me anything about wrestling, but she sent it to me.
She was probably on The Rock's Instagram page. She probably saw it on his page.
Yeah, yeah. I think she did. She likes him, you know, his movies. And he's doing a movie with the guy she really likes, the Captain America guy, Chris
Evans.
Evans, yeah. They're doing a movie together now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I think she was following that and saw that, yeah.
So a little bit of sad news, unfortunately, with the passing of Antonio Inoki, absolute god of wrestling, legend of wrestling. There's no doubt about this. 79 years old. What did you think about the passing of the great Mr. Inoki?
We'll never see the likes of him again. It was a different time and different era. And I worked for both of them. Bob, I worked for four companies there, but I worked for Baba first and then Inoki at the end. He kept it kayfabe to the end. He fought. When I first went over there, I remember reading about him fighting Anton Ginzing. He was, I believe, from Sweden, one of the Scandinavian countries, and had won the Olympic judo, and he fought him. Then he got into a shoot fight with a Pakistani wrestler, and they were supposed to work. and he got the wrist lock on him. What's that, Khmer hold?
Yep.
He got the Khmer hold on the guy, and the guy tapped out. But what I thought was very different about Inoki, I never talked to him that much. I had one meeting with him. And he did a lot of good things for the world, too. You know, he brought wrestling to Korea. And that was to get Japanese people out of there that were prisoners. Did you know that, John?
No, I didn't know the whole back. That's why they did that show, huh?
Yeah, that's why he did the show. And the other thing is, you know, I told you he had a shoot fight with the Pakistan wrestler. Well, he had later on, I think it was in 75, he had a match with another Pakistani wrestler, and the guy beat him. Now, I don't know if it was a shoot or work, but the guy beat him. 22 years later, the guy died, and Inoki took his son and made him his own son.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, Inoki converted to Muslim because of Ali. I was there in New York when the Ali Inoki fight was going to go on. I was in the dressing room when Ali was in the dressing room, and I heard a story that I'm not sure. I've heard it two sides. I've heard that they were going to work, and Ali was going to fall out of the ring, get counted out because he had gloves on. But when Inoki came to the States, John, I don't think he was 180 pounds. His arms looked like they were 12 inches. He must have been, you know, Inoki had some sicknesses during his career. He was very thin. And when Ali saw this chin, he said, oh, I can knock him out. You know what I mean? And that's why Inoki laid on the floor and kicked for the 15 rounds. It's a horrible thing. Ali threw 6 punches in 15 rounds. But here's the crazy thing about that. You know how I am, I'm boxing aficionado. That fight hurt Ali more than people knew. Because Inoki caused blood clots in his legs. And after that, Ali's footwork was never the same.
I agree.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people always think, oh, is it a work or was it a shoot? No, it was a shoot because he really injured his legs. Remember, 2 months later, he was fighting Ken Norton. He was having I mean, not that you wouldn't have a problem with Ken Norton anyway, but he was having a real problem in that fight.
Yeah, he had a problem backing up, especially, you remember?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, so Inoki is the last of the guys that I think try to keep it as real as possible because he fought so many different guys from all over the world. Like he fought Gracie. You know, one of the Gracies said he was one of the top 5 fighters in the world. Now, I'm not going to say that's true, but because they did business together, but I don't think he'd go that far out on a limb if he didn't think Inoki could carry his shit.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm sorry to hear that.
Amazing career and amazing life. And if you look at Ali after that, basically it was like 4-3. I know it was like the final 5 years of his career, but only like a 4-3 record. So you would think like, wow, that's amazing. He really, you know, that hurt him more than a lot of people realize it hurt him. But you would think that, oh, it's not that big of a deal. He's just fighting Inoki. Inoki's just going to lay on the ground and kick his legs. But that really, you know, great strategy by Inoki. I know it made for a boring fight, but, hey, he didn't get knocked out. And he ended up just with a draw with Ali and ended up losing.
Yeah, and look who they had. They had Carl Gotch in Inoki's corner. And they had Gene LaBelle as the referee.
Yep.
Pretty stacked card, right?
Yep. I think the final strike count they were saying was like 107-6 or whatever, like in favor of Inoki. Because he kicked his legs over 100 times. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
I guess technically you could almost give him the win for all those strikes, but obviously it was declared a draw. But, well, I mean, it drew well, and that just shows you the power of Inoki. I know it was in Tokyo, but it shows you the power of Inoki.
Yeah, and it was closed circuit. You remember that? To different arenas?
Yep.
And the Sheik was big on putting money up for that fight, you know. Because he had in a bunch of theaters, and Vince Sr., and I believe the LaBelles. I was on that card in Shea Stadium.
What was the main event, Chuck Wepner and Andre?
No, Bruno and Hansen in the cage.
Oh, right, right, okay.
But the Chuck Wepner, Andre thing, I believe was a shoot.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, if you go back and watch it, you can see Wepner potato him in rabbit punches, and that's when Andre threw him over the top rope. And you could see Monsoon getting hot and chasing into the guys. I don't think it was a work. If it was, it was done very well.
Wow. A buddy of mine knows Chuck Wepner's wife. Says not in great health right now. So hopefully he's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he was a hard liver, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
With Inoki, it's almost like, okay, he fights Ali, and that just makes him kind of like internationally known. You know what I mean? Like, you had, you know, Baba and him kind of going back and forth as far as like who's like the big dog in Japan. But I feel like Inoki kind of leapfrogs him because he fought Muhammad Ali. You know what I mean? That just like his national and global notoriety shot through the roof.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially in Asia, because, you know, also he was a congressman. Are you aware of that? Twice.
Yes. Yep.
He was a congressman. You know, the first time, I think there was a bit of a scandal with him and his party. And then, you know, he came back and won. But he did a lot of good stuff. Like I said, the thing in Korea, bringing the prisoners back, Japanese prisoners, and adopting the guy he wrestled, son. So, I mean, I think on his side of the board, there's a lot more good than bad.
And he's trained, or was trained, many, many years ago by Ricky Dozan, who's right. North Korean, apparently, and Carl Gotch. I mean, he had great training, but that's where the North Korea Inoki connection comes from, right? From Ricky Dozan.
Yeah, and they actually went, I didn't know this until lately, that they went to see Ricky Dozan's birthplace, which is a museum now in North Korea, and he's buried in North Korea, which surprised me. Are you aware of that, John?
I did not know that, no.
Yeah, that surprised me. I thought for sure he would have been buried in Japan.
Yeah, he was like a god in Japan. Wow, yeah. Crazy.
Yeah.
Basically the big star of Japan, like the Jim Londis or the Babe Ruth or the Hogan of Japan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So with like Inoki and that training, when he obviously, you know, breaks off and becomes New Japan Pro Wrestling, what did you think of just the, I don't know, I guess the scale of the way he turned New Japan into not only huge there, but I mean, he'd bring in guys, Dory Funk, Terry Funk. I know they're more old Japan, but you know, he'd bring them in. He'd bring in the Hogans of the world, Andre the Giants. I mean, he'd made it so that it was a global thing, but obviously it's New Japan Pro Wrestling. What'd you think about New Japan?
He had a fight to make that work too, because at first Barber got, you know, they both became NWA territories, but at first it was just Baba, and there was a lot of hands off on Inoki through the NWA, but Vince Sr. booked for Inoki, which was a very unusual thing. Vince Sr. booked for Inoki and Bruno booked for Baba. And the Funk booked for Baba too. But that's pretty, was pretty strange the star and the owner worked for two different companies in Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very odd. But
go ahead.
But what he was able to do is just amazing with making those connections and being able to be tied to those guys.
Yeah, and the other thing is, do you know Bob was a big draw in New York City?
You know, I was going to mention that to you because they give him the WWF title, technically. I know they take it away and Backlund gets it back and they pretend it didn't happen, but, you know, he's technically WWF champion.
Yeah, but I mentioned Baba was a big draw in New York City. Do you know that before Inoki?
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
He was big in the gardens. He worked with Bruno a couple of times in the gardens. And because of that, they had a great friendship. And Bruno never beat him in Japan. I think he did a job for Baba, a count-out.
Interesting. Because then, obviously, Inoki comes over, and right. He becomes a big star and a big draw. Because in 1979, in Japan, technically, he beats Backlund, and then right. Backlund gets it back in New York.
Right, and wasn't that Bobby wrestled Bobby Duncombe to get it back? Pretty sure.
Yes, yep.
Yeah.
So in a Texas death match. So if you look at it, it's almost like Inoki really is kind of the uncrowned. He never lost. He never lost the WWF title.
Well, it's sort of like the Edward Carpentier and Lou Thesz. You know that, right? The switch for, I think it was 81 days or 91 days.
Then it gets erased, right? They don't recognize it?
Yeah, they half them recognized it. And the athletic ones that had an athletic commission recognized it. All of them recognized it. Montreal, Toronto, Boston, L.A. And then they just did away with it, which I thought was very strange.
Funny how we, like, if you're not a historian or if you're not a fan, you don't really look into it. You're like, Inoki was never WWF champion. Oh, wait, what's this picture of him wearing the WWF right. title? Like, people don't realize. I mean, that's a really cool part of history.
Well, you know, Baba won the NWA belt, I think, three times, right?
Yes.
Twice with Briscoe, once with
Harley.
Harley, yeah.
Do you think he paid Harley and Briscoe a little bit extra cheddar to do that?
Oh, yes. I think there was $25,000 on top of their salaries.
I would do that in a heartbeat. Hey, how many times am I going to lose? All right.
Yeah.
Wow, look at that. Do you think Inoki maybe did the same thing with Backlund?
Oh, I'm sure.
It's one of those things where does Backlund's reign really as long as we think it is? Because that would end that reign at a certain point.
Right.
And take him out of the record books. But they don't recognize, unfortunately, they don't recognize it.
Right. I saw Ric Flair lose his title in Singapore to Steve Rickard.
Who the hell is that?
Who was the promoter of Asia, New Zealand, owned Hawaii at one time. Yeah.
So he paid Flair, Flair put him over?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to mention like Jack Veneno or one of those guys that Flair lost to randomly.
Yeah, no. Steve Rickard.
Wow, crazy. But getting back to Inoki, it's interesting that he's got such a tie with Brazil as well, because obviously when the war happened, he's a young kid, him and his family ended up moving to Brazil, and that tie in there. I wonder if that kind of gave him just more of like a fighting background. I know obviously there's a deep tradition with the Japanese fighting background, but he almost had a little bit of the Brazilian fighting background as well. I know he was a track star and a track athlete, but the fighting background definitely helped as well.
Yeah, and have you heard that he met Ricky Dozan in Brazil?
Yes, that's what I was going to mention. That kind of ties him into pro wrestling, too, because that's how, I don't know how, but that's how he met Ricky Dozan in Brazil.
I mean, I wonder how Ricky Dozan, was he wrestling in Brazil? Wrestling in, you know, about that time, there used to be a lot of wrestling in South America. You know, Rocca came from there. That's where Antonio Inoki took the name from, Antonio Rocca. I wonder if Ricky Dozan was over there wrestling.
Yeah, I never got the full story of maybe he was doing a tour. I don't know if he was on vacation, but somebody introduced him to Inoki. He's like, this is a Japanese kid living here in Brazil. And he basically became like, not his disciple, but his protege. Right. You know, he became, because he's like, hey, I got JWA, the Japanese Wrestling Association. I got Carl Gotch over here. You know, you're a guy we're looking at. We want to make you a star.
And, you know, there's a huge Japanese population in Brazil. They came before World War II and after World War II and during World War II.
With him, it's so fascinating because, like, you have Baba, you have Inoki, but he had such like a different, I know people say Inokiism and they start saying that stuff. Like he had such a unique way of looking at pro wrestling, much more like a sport. I know Baba to an extent too, but he's got the baseball background. So it's a little bit more like athletics, but Inoki was like much more like a sport, but much more MMA based, you know, much more realism, much more submissions. Like he had a different view and a different look of pro wrestling.
Yeah. Did you ever see the YouTube of him and the giant Inoki, Anton?
The great Antonio, yes.
Oh, yeah, a great Antonio, that's his name. Boy, did he beat him to death, huh? I wonder who that manager was outside the ring.
I don't know. He was like freaking out, though.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think happened there? Because people say, oh, he stiffed him. Oh, he no-sold him. What was the reason Inoki just snapped and just beat the shit out of him?
He no-sold him. And he completely no-sold him. And then he laid some on back at Inoki's neck. That's a real insult. You know what I mean? You know, your neck, you know, you can take a chest shot or a gut shot or a shoulder shot. But the back of your neck, with a guy that big, he's fooling around with you.
When you look at the size difference of them, you're like, there's no way Inoki can kick this guy's ass. He beats living hell out of him, knocks him out, bloodies him up, kicks him square in the nose. I mean, what awesome. It was great because it's like this guy needs to get his comeuppance, and he got it immediately.
Oh, he sure did. He sure did. I loved what he's right before he got the shit beat out of him. He's no selling Inoki, then he starts smacking his stomach with his fist. Do you remember that, John?
Yeah. Yeah.
Here is where you're going to kick me, Antonio. Right here, right here. Oh, God.
And if anybody hasn't seen that, go to YouTube typing Antonio Inoki versus the great Antonio. Man, I think Josh Barnett just posted it on Twitter and stuff. Obviously, he knows his stuff. Yeah. He was saying, this is awesome. You know, this is great. Kick this guy's ass.
Yeah.
So when you look at just Inoki and just look at what he did, how does he get all these great stars from the U.S. to Japan? The Andre the Giants, the Hulk Hogan's, the Vaders. How does he like recruit these guys in? Because he makes them into, you know, huge global stars with a lot of his help.
I think the Japanese thing really gave Hogan his first power, where he could turn down Vern. I think he was willing to pay. And I think he had a good view on talent. You know, he saw that you weren't going to find a 6'8" guy, blonde hair with muscles like Hogan. You weren't going to find a monster like Vader everywhere. A giant, you know what I mean? And then the Brody, right? And Abdullah, you know. Tiger Jet Singh, you know, he brought in a lot of freaky people too. And then he would settle it off by bringing in pro boxers, you know. Didn't Leon Spinks work for him for a couple of shows?
And he would love bringing in the Japanese, not the Japanese, the Gaijin, like wrestlers, like the Russian guys that would win the Olympics.
Right.
That guy Salmon. I mean, there was a bunch of guys that were like Olympic legit wrestlers he'd bring in.
And Olympic judo guys, Olympic karate guys. Who was the famous black karate guy that he fought? Oh, he was on all the magazines back in the late 70s, early 80s. And he put an Oki over. I mean, you know, he fought a bunch of different guys and from all different. He actually, if you look at it, he actually started mixed martial arts.
Definitely.
I mean, I'm sure there was, you know, you could go back to Gene LaBelle and the other guy, and it was at Denver, Salt Lake City in the early 50s. But Inoki brought in big names to fight him in every discipline known.
I think he definitely helped start the modern version of MMA because you got, you know, boxer versus wrestler. You had all this different stuff. I mean, that's essentially what MMA is. And pro wrestling is basically the godfather of MMA, whether MMA fans want to admit it or not, it is. So, I mean, he had a lot to do with it. He loved that stuff, you know, the legit shoots. He loved that fighting style.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
And he didn't fear one of the greatest boxers, if not the greatest boxer of all time. He didn't fear getting him in the ring. So the Japanese love that spirit because, like, oh, he could get knocked out, but he doesn't fear it.
Yeah, no fair.
When you look at him too, I feel like the business sense was great because it's like maybe he didn't want to lose to Hogan. Maybe Hogan by accident knocked him out in that match, but that gets Hogan over when he wins the IWGP tournament when they had the first ones. Like, wow, Hogan beat Inoki. Vader a few years later, he kills Inoki. And you know what I mean?
3 minutes, right?
Yep.
It was 3 minutes. He killed him.
So he knew how to do business, and he was smart enough to realize Hogan's a star, Vader's a star. Once I put them over, this is going to create a huge money-making feud for me.
Yep. And, you know, I think, you know, we go back about Dusty not wanting to put guys over. Dusty would do the same thing. I don't know if Dusty got that from Inoki, or vice versa, but it was smart on Inoki's part. And he was very smart because look at the position he was in. He was looked upon as the man in Japan. And then to do a job for the big blonde guy and then the monster in 3 minutes, I wonder if, how much he thought about it before he did. I'm thinking he realized it was the right thing for business. And it was because he made a lot of money off those guys.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Yep.
How does WCW make their relationship with him? Because obviously in the 90s, you guys were, you know, tied together for a few years.
Saito and I were friends. And they called and asked if Eric and I would come to a meeting in Hawaii. And Eric structured the deal, and they came to Saito came to me and said, hey, we want this deal to work. And I said, listen, whatever you want me to do with the Japanese talent, I'm going to do. I'm never going to embarrass you. If there's anything, and I never heard from them after the first show. They let me just do it, the right thing. But they were paying us $1 million a year, John. And they were flying their guys on their dime and paying them on their money. The reverse, when our guys went there, they got paid by the Japanese plus WCW. And that flight was on the Japanese. So we had the sweetheart of a deal there. And I certainly wasn't going to screw that up. You know, there's a lot of times that I took very good care of Scott Norton, because he was one of their guys over there. And I wasn't going to screw that deal up to save my life.
It's like a win-win-win for you guys. They're paying most of the way.
Absolutely. It was a great win for us.
Who set up that deal? Like, as far as, like, the money, how that went?
Eric did. We both flew over there, met with them in a hotel, and we were there for a couple of hours, and I had the little talk with Saito off, and Eric structured the whole money deal. That was his baby. Did a great job.
See, that's great because you guys are getting $1 million. You know, they'll get some guys, but they're going to pay for them. Like Sting will go over there. Savage goes over there. Flair, Luger. I mean, they're getting some good names and some big guys. Mike Rotunda goes over there. He, you know, he's in the NWA. I mean, they get some good talent that goes over to them, but they're going to end up paying for them.
And they also had the NWO over there, right? The Japanese NWO, and their merchandise went through the roof. So it was easy for them to write off that $1 million.
Definitely. I think it was well worth it for them. They have a good relationship with then, you know, the number one wrestling company for, you know, for a few years, obviously, was the number one wrestling company in the world, WCW.
Right. They did very well.
But globally, you can almost say New Japan might have had, and all Japan too at one point, but New Japan, I mean, they had 60,000 people at the Tokyo Dome. I mean, they were making money hand over foot too.
Yeah, I remember the last time I wrestled the Tokyo Dome, I think they drew 50,000 people on a Friday, and Saturday, all Japan, or maybe it was the month before, where they, a couple of months before, where they both ran on the same weekend, and they did, Inoki did 50, and Baba did about $65,000.
Wow.
Crazy, huh?
Crazy numbers. Those Japanese fans, they you know, they love their wrestling. They used to love their wrestling.
Yeah.
Not so much anymore. I mean, they still draw decently, but man, those were the days when New Japan and Baba with All Japan were going head to head. They were drawing huge houses.
Right, right.
It was almost like some of the guys like Norton and a few of the other, even the Steiner Bros at one point, Road Warriors at one point, like they'd rather work in Japan. They were probably getting paid more money.
Right. They're getting paid a huge amount of money in Japan. And, you know, once you go over there and kind of fall into the system, it's a pretty nice way to travel.
For sure. And if you even look at like when Pride Fighting Championships open, Inoki is always welcome with open arms at those shows. God sakes, one show he came down in a parachute from the ceiling at the Tokyo, one of the, I think it was Tokyo, then one of the shows, and like the crowd's going nuts because it's Antonio Inoki. So, I mean, he reached like God level status there, and it's just like, this is this pro wrestling owner, but he's here at MMA and we're love him. I mean, remember there was another incident, not incident, but all the fans line up and he slaps them in the face, and they all said it was a sign of respect. So, I mean, he's treated like a god over there.
Right, right. I remember seeing that clip where he slapped them all in the face. Yeah. Crazy.
It's like, I don't know, they felt like they were getting some sort of power from a guy who's a god, like a legit guy. If he hits you, you get some sort of either fighting spirit or some sort of power comes from that.
You know, his religion was the Shaito religion. Are you aware of that?
No.
I looked that up because there's been I'm going to be wrong with this number, but I'm going to say there's 1 million people in their book that has been reincarnated, right? Well, there's over 1,000 people that were war criminals, and they've been, that religion has been ostracized so much. The Shaito religion comes from where the emperor was actually God. He was God. And I've often thought about this. Okay, you believe in that religion. You're in World War II. You got nothing to worry about, right? You haven't lost a war in a long, long, long time. You beat the Russians. You conquered China. You got nothing to worry about because God is your emperor. What happens when they drop the bomb the next day? When you realize that human being isn't God? I mean, don't you think that's a really, really strange thing? To look it up and look up him, because I'm thinking now, did he give that up to become a Muslim? I'm not sure.
Yeah, interesting. Because obviously he did, like you said, with Ali, he did become Muslim for sure. With him, and just going back to North Korea, so he's the one that comes to you guys to put the whole Collision in Korea show together? Obviously it's two shows back to back, and we have an episode dedicated to it, but is that what happens? He comes to you guys?
I'm sure that he had somebody come to meet Eric. And Eric put that show together, and he had a list of guys that he wanted to go. And the first, I'm sure Eric flew to Japan and met with them after there was a meeting somewhere with maybe Saito and Hattori. And then Eric went to Japan and they smoothed the deal out, and then they went to Korea. Pretty amazing that they could go to Korea back in the day.
Man, but nuts to think of that. 165,000 night, 190,000 people night two. I don't know if they were forced to be there or not. They supposedly, maybe some of them were, but still, I mean, what a crowd.
Yeah. I wonder if they applauded at all.
Yeah, when you listen back, only a few matches, like Inoki they were into, but all the other matches, not really. He was kind of the only one they were really into.
I think he's the only one they knew.
Yep. I mean, even Flair, he's a god, but they don't TV and stuff over there. They don't know who he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they knew Inoki because of Ricky Dozan.
Right.
But, man, what a career. I know New Japan kind of ends for him, and I think somewhere around 2005. But, you know, he still had other things. I mean, he still do some MMA stuff. He did IGF. He had his hands in some other stuff, but mostly, like you said, some government stuff. And he was a congressman. And, you know, obviously he might have had some inner workings with the Yakuza, which is, you know, highly documented. But, you know, he had some shady stuff going on. But he had some political savvy.
You got to realize this, too. I mean, history is a funny thing, right? It's written by the winners. The Yakuza really came into power after World War II. I mean, Japan was decimated, right?
Yeah.
You couldn't get supplies unless you were on rations. You couldn't get extra supplies unless you went to the Yakuza and they had shit falling off the truck, right? They were actually like Robin Hood in some respects. They would go to the family if that had a house burnt down, give them food, shelter, build a house back for them. Holidays, or, you know, if there was a disaster, they were there to help. It helped their protection too, because are you going to squeal on a guy that you're hardly getting any food? Are you going to squeal on a bunch of guys that come and buy and give you money? I don't think so. So as time went on, it lost, I believe. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's still as strong, but I don't think any of them are still as strong as they once were, meaning the Yakuza and the American Mafia. They've become more legit, I think. But, I mean, they ran wrestling and boxing and sports for decades.
It always seemed like Inoki, you know, had his dealings with them or maybe working with them. So, I mean, there obviously is some shadiness to that as well. But, I don't know, to me, he thought he was above that kind of stuff. But, obviously, he had to deal with all that stuff because that's very, very prevalent.
Yeah, he wasn't above it. I'll give you this is Baba, who wasn't as, I don't believe, as entrenched. They were both entrenched, but I think Inoki was a little bit more entrenched. We would go to towns when I first, 1972, when I first started going to Japan. Wow, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Where we would go to towns, John, and I'd, you know, everybody say to the bus driver, how's the town? Sold out. How many people? 4,000. We go to a town, John, and there'd be 300 people there. Yet all the tickets were sold. The Yakuza would go around and sell them to businesses. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, I mean, they were all connected, you know what I mean? Government was connected. I mean, it was a whole different whole different mindset. Do you know what I'm saying? Whole different mindset that, I mean, I always thought how Japan's wrestling exploded, right? Why didn't it explode in Germany?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Maybe because they didn't have an Yakuza.
Could be. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's a interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think the Yakuza was laundering money, don't you?
Oh, no doubt about that. Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, I think the Americans had no idea what the Yakuza was. You know what I mean? And a few of them did, I'm sure. But in Germany, I'm sure they watched them a lot closer. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Just
definitely.
Yeah.
Hey, and to Antonio Inoki too. Just want to mention this was a member of the WWE Hall of Fame. So you know they recognized him pretty greatly. I think it was 2010. So that's a pretty cool honor because obviously he wrestled very sparingly for the WWF, and it was 30 years before that. But pretty cool that he gets in the WWE Hall of Fame.
I think he deserves to be. He was. I mean, he's a founding father. One of the three founding fathers of pro wrestling in Japan. It's Ricky Dozen, Baba, and Inoki.
For sure.
Yeah.
What an interesting life, if you look at it. Because, we're talking about North Korea. Like, what the hell? Like, that's crazy. The Yakuza. Like, that's crazy. You know, we're talking about wrestling Hogan, Flair, Vader. Like, all these big names. But then, negotiating with Saddam Hussein to get, who's a terrorist, to get guys... Right. That of Japanese out of Iraq. So it's like, holy crap. Like, not only that, it's like you're dealing with terrorists. Like, wow. Like, what a life.
Yeah, it was a life well lived, Hats off to him. God bless him.
Kind of creating, whether you want to say it or not, pseudo creating MMA, fighting Muhammad Ali. What do you think, though, really is the legacy of Antonio Inoki when you look at it? Because all this stuff we're saying, North Korea, Ali, Saddam Hussein, the Yakuza, Hogan, Flair, New Japan Pro Wrestling, MMA, what's his legacy?
I think I said it earlier, we're not going to see his likes again. He's one of a kind.
I agree. To me, it's like you don't want to say a guy's like a god amongst men, but I love saying that because he really, really was. If you look at it, it's like, wow, yeah. Like his stature was like unbelievable. That if he touched another human being in Japan, that human being is like, yes, even if it was a slap, like, yes, he touched me.
Right, right. And, he just didn't do it for himself either. Like you said, he went to Saddam Hussein. And didn't he go to Gaddafi too at one time?
There was somebody else, I missed it, but there was somebody else. There was another huge name terrorist that was involved in his crazy life. Yeah, it might have been Gaddafi.
Yeah, I think it was Gaddafi. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that part of the world, he was, like you said, a god.
Did you love working for him? Did you, did you enjoy that part?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love working for the Japanese. I mean, they treat you very nice, but it's business. You do your job, you're going to be treated very, very well.
So as far as Antonio Inoki, obviously, rest in peace, 79 years old, one of the greatest of all time, God amongst men. Like you said, there'll never be another one like him. But as far as you and the Tales from Territory, what were the episodes that we're going to see on? I don't know if you know when, but like which episodes will you be a part of?
I'm part of the Florida one. I'm part of the Hawaii one. And now I'm going to be part of one that's about Eddie and Mike Graham.
Very interested in watching these because they're on my DVR, but it's very interested in kind of catching up on them and watching them because they seem good, especially if The Rock is pushing them and his company. And, it seems like it's going to be damn good.
And I believe it starts October 4th or 5th, doesn't it? Tonight, maybe?
It is soon. I know one has been recorded on my DVR already, so it might have been October 4th.
Okay, great.
But let's hit the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Kevin, where can we find you?
I'll be down at Coastal Championship Wrestling later on in the month. And I'm taking some little time off and going fishing Florida. So that's about it, JP.
Nice. Of course, you can go to Pressing Tees, PressingTees.com, and visit the Kevin Sullivan store. Got some cool stuff there. And, Kevin, I don't know if you realize this, but Fishing Clash is a sponsor. Great app that you can easily download on your phone. And I know you love fishing, so I got the app here on my phone. This thing is cool. It's a little addicting, but in a good way. Like, you're going to love it. The promo code, of course, is Taskmaster when you go on there, when you go under codes. But thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother. Please welcome in our new sponsor, Fishing Clash. Download Fishing Clash for free right now on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of your Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose the gift code section, and input my special code, Taskmaster, to get an awesome reward for a total value of $20. Enjoy chilling atmosphere after a hard working day. Get familiar with different types of fish species and their habits. You can choose one or two, or you know what you like the most. Explore amazing fishing spots worldwide from Florida to Kamchatka. Whether you prefer fly fishing, ice fishing, trolling, you'll admire the look of all the fishing spots available in this game. This game will help you remember how you went fishing with your dad when you were a kid. So download Fishing Clash today for free on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of the Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose gift code section, and input the special code TASKMASTER to get a total value of $20. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fishing Clash, as it is a great casual time killer. If you've experienced a loss of motivation, energy, or sex drive, or if you're noticing that you're a little softer around the middle than you used to be, it could be your testosterone levels have dropped. By the time men reach the age of 30, in most cases, their T levels have started to decline, and low T can lead to a loss of muscle mass, depression, lack of energy, and a low sex drive. The good news is now you have your remedy with Test X9. This stuff is the real deal, guys. This formula has 9 clinically proven ingredients to naturally boost your body's own testosterone production. Experience increases in strength, energy, and sex drive, as well as improved mood and well-being. Feedback has been awesome. guys in their 30s and 40s have reported waking up with the quote-unquote morning wood for the first time since they were teenagers. If you want to take it to the next level, you can maximize your results with the Ultimate Test Stack, which combines the Test X9 with the T-Assist, an estrogen control and liver support blend, and Recovery PM, an amazing sleep aid that has had incredible feedback for helping people to get the best sleep they've ever had without feeling groggy that next day. You'll be amazed with the effect of raising your T levels and improving your sleep will have on your overall performance and well-being. Don't settle for average. Man up at LegacySupps.com. That is LegacySupps.com. And use the promo code Sullivan for an additional 10% off your entire order. That's LegacySupps.com. And use that promo code Sullivan for 10% off your entire order for the best health and workout supplements out there. This is Pro Wrestler approved.